Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of Will Ospreay's The Greatest Professional Wrestler of All Time. Oh, sorry. I mean The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. I'm your host, Tyler Forrest. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland. Fred, what a show.
My goodness. Yeah, they nailed that one. There was a little period in the middle where it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if the, you know, we started hot and then we kind of, you know, wasn't really bad in the middle too much, but it was not great for a little bit there. And then Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay came out and, you know, we were good then.
Oh, dear God. We're going to get to that. We're going to start at the top and we are going to go all the way down. Fred, did you watch the pre-show?
I did not. Well, kind of. I watched the last of the pre-show, the six-man title unification match. I did not watch the two previous matches.
It was a fun pre-show. Yeah. I was doing some writing. I had it on in the background. I really enjoyed it. Trent Barretta, Matt Sydal, good match. Good match. Not great, but a really solid pre-show opener, like 3.25, 3.5. Calls out Chuck Taylor, and then Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata make their entrance as Trent is on the ring ramp. And then the second Shibata's music hits, he bails down the heel tunnel. Just hilarious. Shibata and Orange Cassidy versus Shane Taylor Promotions rocked. They got to find something to do with Shane Taylor. Like, actually, other than just this dude's going to put on a 3.5 to 4-star match every single week on television.
Like, yeah, I think that's a good stable right now. I think that it'd be nice to do a little more with them if possible.
I would actually like them to join up with Swerve. And I mean, Swerve would have to be the main guy, mm-hmm. But I think that could really work because, like, Shane Taylor is a heavy rocks. Like, I was never really impressed with him in Ring of Honor. I've been really impressed with him in AEW. I think it helps that he's slimmed down quite a bit, and he's in much better shape than he was during like his peak ROH run. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really know what his peak run would be, but I'm thinking like what he was in like 2019, 2020, 2021. Like, he's just in a much better spot.
Yeah, I agree. He, I really like what he's become. I think Lee Moriarty does have some promise, and I think Anthony Gogo is a good, you know, I'm going to punch guys really hard. That's my gimmick guy. And I think it's a promising group.
Yeah, and good stuff. None of this was really must watch, but it was fun. It was a good appetizer. And then you had the Acclaimed versus Bullet Club Gold. And look, this was exactly what it needed to be. Billy Gunn takes the pin from Jay White after White hits the Blade Runner. But I thought it was hilarious that Billy Gunn kicked out of the Ass Boys' finisher, and I think a cheap shot as well. Just hilarious that Billy Gunn's like, nah, fuck you boys, I'm gonna have Jay White pin me. Just
gotta keep Billy strong.
You know, I liked it. I hope this means that we get something new with the Acclaimed. Look, the daddy ass story of him getting it one more title before he retires, I think was cool. I also think he got super long in the tooth after, like, I don't know, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So now Bullet Club Gold can hopefully move on to something. They have something with these guys. The Ass Boys have turned themselves into a good tag team. Mm-hmm. They are perfect, like, little douchebag tag team guys for somebody who's as scummy as Jay White. You know, when Juice comes back, like, they could push these guys to the moon. I really like what they have here, but I just don't know what we're going to see from them and how Tony is going to potentially push them here moving forward. There's a lot to like, but we'll kind of see. I gave this like 3.25. Like, it wasn't a great match. It was entertaining. It was engaging. And I think that aspect is really important when having this conversation.
I gave it 2.5. I thought it was fine. If I never see Billy Gunn wrestle again, it's too soon. I just kind of hope that we're done with this. You know, the Sting nostalgia return worked because Sting was very good at it. And Billy Gunn, I mean, as comical as it is to see him, like, no-sell everything that the heels do to him, essentially. Though he took, I think, 3 bumps on this night, which is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. The Acclaimed, I think, have really suffered over the past year. They've gotten really stale. I think they had a good thing going for a while, but unfortunately, I think they've kind of hit their high watermark, and that's it. I mean, it's tough to be in that spot, but I do think that they are in that spot. It's unfortunate, but they got to figure something out with them, and I just don't think that they are nearly as well off as they were a few years ago.
Yeah. Let's get to the main card, though, because the pre-show, it was fine. The main card, holy shit. And it kicked off with a bang. Kazuchika Okada versus Pac for the Continental Championship. This is a main event anywhere else in the world except on this show. And I think you could argue that this is one of the greatest openers in the history of television wrestling. Like, period. This was phenomenal. And the background is great, too, because Pac is arguably the greatest foreigner to ever go through Dragon Gate. He held the Open the Dream Gate in that title run in 2018 where he wouldn't job to anybody and really reestablished it as a great title. Was so good. And then I think he lost to Ben K at Kobe World.
I think you're right.
I mean, Dragon Gate's so interesting with how they book some of their guys, because once they're on the top of the card and they lose, they go to the bottom. So it's like Ben K is a dude there, but he's not maybe not the huge star that they hoped he was going to be, but he did get elevated really well by the Pac match. And then obviously Okada was trained by Ultimo Dragon and was initially in the Dragon system before ended up going over to New Japan, and the rest is history. So the background with these two guys is fantastic. And then they go in there and they basically had, I don't remember who said this, but it was an Okada paced Pac match. And yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and another thing that I think is really interesting, just to go back to Pac as the Dragon Gate champ, is that when he first came in at AEW, he was still the champion, and I think there was some match where he was supposed to put over Adam Page on one of the early shows, and he wouldn't do it because he was the champ of Dragon Gate, if I'm recalling the story correctly. So they went to a time limit draw instead, and then they turned that into a longer feud, which is really good early on. Yeah, I thought this match was a lot of fun. I really liked this, and I frankly thought they knocked it out of the park on many, many shows. This would be the best match on the show. It was not tonight. It was probably my second best, but boy, oh boy, what a start to the show. Okada is just perfect as a TV heel right now. He's got that completely figured out, and it's a lot of fun to see him just like immediately take to this act he's doing.
Yeah, it's, this stuff is incredible. Okada, there were some worries about him translating to the like television wrestling, translating to US wrestling, because just how the presentation is just, it's different. Not to say it's bad or better, it's different. And like a big star in Arena Mexico may be absolutely nothing in the United States. And a good example of that is like Rocky Romero, where like sometimes it's just not a one-to-one. If the guy's a huge star somewhere, they may never be a star somewhere else. So there were some concerns about Okada. Maybe his star power is just not going to be the same. Maybe it's this, that, or the other thing. Oh my God, has he translated one-to-one? It's been incredible. And he gets packed down, I think, with a drop kick. And then he just goes around the ring and gets the crowd hyped up because they know they're getting the Rainmaker pose. And he is just baiting them like, come on, come on, come on. And then right as he's about to do the Rainmaker pose, drops the middle finger. And mega heat for not getting the pose and the camera shot. Just absolutely perfection from Okada. Great heel work. And this match was awesome. And the finish I thought was particularly great too, Fred, where Pac's about to hit the Black Arrow and Okada gets his knees up and Pac gets his face absolutely impaled by Okada's knees. And then Okada picks him up, Rainmakers him to the Shadow Realm and gets the win. And then after the match, Okada walks to the back and Pac is still in the ring. And I want to ask you this question before, that you can do before or after you talk about the match. Does this mean they have more for Pac? Or was this like a quasi curtain call that he's done? Because I kind of got vibes of both. But no matter what it is, I'm really intrigued for Pac's future.
I got to figure that they have more planned for him. I mean, he's too good to not.
Right?
Yeah, you'd think. Now, I do think that there was some talk about how maybe initially there was some concern that they wouldn't be getting him back or something of the sort. But I mean, frankly, if you can, you have to use Pac as a pretty big deal of a dude. He's just fantastic. And it'd be foolish to be like, well, I don't know if we have anything for him. Like, you got to find something for him. You know, it's that simple. So I don't know. I have to figure there's more in store for him. I'm a big Pac fan. I think he's a fantastic performer and I'm really interested to see where things go from here.
Me too. Just absolutely impressive display from both guys. I gave this 4.5+ and truly one of the better matches I've ever seen open a pay-per-view.
Because awesome. I'm truly just one of the bravest people out there. I gave it a 4.75.
Yeah. So. We'll see how brave you are later in the show. Next up, the Rated Chicken Hawks. Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe versus the House of Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews, Malachi Black. Malachi Black pins Adam Copeland after Black Mass. Still one of the best finishers in all of professional wrestling. I'm not going to lie. I had fun. I didn't think it was particularly great, but it was like pay-per-views need more matches like this. Just a random assortment of guys just doing cool shit. And then you build a story off of it. So moving forward, you're going to get Malachi Black versus Adam Copeland for that TNT title. And if you remember, Edge, Eric Copeland has talked about wanting to wrestle Malachi Black. So I don't know how this is going to end. And obviously before Black Mass, Copeland got the mist to the face. Is he going to go to that place? I hope not, because his run has been really, really good so far.
Yeah, I could do without that.
But yeah, this has been really, really cool to watch. And I'm really, really excited to kind of see what this feud ends up looking like. Should be great. but we'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think that they could really do some cool stuff. Look, as frustrating as it is that Malachi frequently disappears, it feels like I do think he's a very, very good performer. And, you know, when he's able to keep away from, you know, some of the sillier aspects of the character, what I find silly. So I would love to see him just have an extended feud and just outright, you know, do some stuff with Adam Copeland and have a straight feud and just do some matches. I am mildly concerned about where, you know, this could end up going, depending on, you know, the people that are involved and what their predilections may be for professional wrestling. But, you know, if we're fortunate, then we won't have anything to worry about with that. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. I don't know. I gave this 4. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was special. I don't think you need to go seek it out. But it's just a fun match with a lot of cool stuff and a lot of interesting combatants. Like, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I'm a 4.25 on it. I thought it was very fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And you could do far worse than, you know, this match. You know, I think I do think Copeland's probably the 6th best worker out of the 6, but hey, he's got name recognition. He gets big reactions every time he goes out, so I get it. But, you know, I do think this is a pretty good way to set something up, and, you know, fingers crossed that we get something really good.
I will say that I thought this was like the quasi replacement for the Darby Allin pay-per-view match where they just,
oh yeah,
it's just guys doing cool shit.
Yeah, all right, I can see that. Yeah, guys being dudes.
And speaking of guys being dudes, let's talk about women's wrestling. Julia Hart takes on Willow Nightingale for the TBS championship, and we get the title change where Willow Nightingale gets a pinfall with the Doctor Bomb. Look, I was really surprised this was an actual match. I thought this would be an angle, and I thought Willow wasn't going to win. My thinking was you set up kind of that injury angle the other night on Dynamite, and you use this as the beginning of a feud with Mercedes, and you do like a longer term build, and you focus on making this a longer term story instead of, hey, their first match is going to be a Double or Nothing. I thought you could have really extended it and built up some real animosity, because for me, Monet broke her ankle against Willow. Willow didn't break her ankle. Like,
yeah,
I don't buy that Monet is just mad at Willow for this. I don't, because Monet slipped off the ropes climbing. It wasn't like Willow like threw her and then she landed badly or anything. Willow had nothing to do with it. So for me, the story doesn't work right now. And I wanted something more to kind of build up to it. Maybe they'll get there. I don't like the story as it is right now.
I think it's fair to have a story where Mercedes blames her for that, you know, even if it wasn't directly the fault of Willow. But at the same time,
but she's a baby face. To me, that's where the logic kind of goes out.
She's
not presented as a heel, Fred.
Isn't she? I mean, I think they could easily position her as a heel if they want to.
No, they could, but they're not. And to me, that's a differentiating factor here. I if Mercedes is mad, then she blames Willow. Sure. Okay. I get that. A babyface doesn't do that. A heel does. So if you're going to make her heel, you should have already done so. And you should have made it blatantly obvious instead of this towing the line bullshit. Just go all out. And to me, I think you have to do that. I think you have to make her the heel. It's Willow. Any other woman on the roster, you can make the heel in this situation. I don't think you can do that with Willow. Not to say that she can't do it, but she has this bubbly babyface energy.
I don't think she should do it.
it's special. But if you're going to do it, you're going to need more than what they've given you. You're going to need a true reason. And I don't think they're going to have the ability to turn her heel until after this match. And I think it's been poorly managed. I think the storyline just doesn't add up as well as it should. And there's a lot of opportunity here, and I just think they're missing. And to me, that's my biggest frustration. It's not even like Monet versus Willow completely makes sense for a match. They need to fix how they're getting there.
Oh, I got a guy at the door. Give me 1 second.
How dare you, Fred? How dare you? As Fred answers the door, which is probably the FedEx guy. I do think that when we're talking about Mercedes Moné and how she's been presented so far in this company, you can tell that she's still trying to get comfortable. She's still trying to understand what is going on in this realm of professional wrestling, because she's never really been a professional wrestler in that sense before. Like, she had the small run in New Japan and Stardom. Last, what, 4 matches before she got hurt? She's been a WWE lifer. Other than, you know, some indie dates, but because it was before being in a major professional wrestling company, I don't think that counts. And she's, you can tell she's just trying to get comfortable. I wonder what's going to happen once she does start to get comfortable. And to me, some of that presentation has been really frustrating. It's been kind of difficult to watch. But overall, it hasn't all been bad. It's just annoying because I think she's got so much to offer. I really want to see more from Monet. And maybe we'll get it. Maybe like this last pre-tape that we saw on Dynamite saw her a little bit more comfortable. Saw her get acclimated to AEW just a little bit more. And maybe that's the secret sauce right now. Maybe the secret sauce is to get her doing more pre-tapes, because you can tell that Monet is not comfortable right now with what she's doing in comparison to what she was doing with WWE. And maybe that's part of my sticking point with the Monet storyline, Fred, is she's just not at the level that we thought she'd be, and she's just not comfortable in how this company operates, especially with some of those speaking elements. But it's not to say that she won't get there. We've seen a few people come in from WWE and just not feel super comfortable right away, and then they've kind of grown into it and they get the flow of this company. It's like I was in the restaurant business for a decade. I worked at Applebee's and I worked at Buffalo Wild Wings. And when you go from one company to the other, like, you're doing the same things, but it's different practices. It's a different way of going about the same process. And I think she's kind of dealing with that right now. And you'd think with somebody with her talent and star power and potential that we'd be in a better spot than we currently are. But it's also not a death sentence either. So I'm intrigued to kind of see how she continues to grow and develop, but I just wish it was faster.
Yeah, and also they still haven't had her do the best thing that she does, which is wrestle. So, you know, that's a pretty big factor, I think. She's never been all that great talking, and unfortunately, all they've had her do is talk. I do think that what she did on Dynamite last week was perfectly acceptable. You know, I think she's had a couple segments that weren't particularly great, but I thought that one was just fine. Look, we're not exactly talking about you know, Austin 316 or something, some all-time great promo, Hard Times or whatever you choose. But it was fine. You know, I didn't have an issue with it. I thought that she did her job last week. This week, she, I don't know, man. I think that every time she comes on screen, she unintentionally or not comes off as a heel, just with the way that she very much carries herself like a bigger deal than anyone else on the roster. At least it comes across to me that her character thinks that. As my gutter guy, to go full Joe Lanza here, my gutter guy is just arrived to clean the gutters. So That is what you are hearing in the background. But yeah, I mean, you know, you got to hope that we'll get a little something more from her, but, you know, time will tell.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one, which I was surprised how much time they gave this. I think you might have the numbers in front of you, but this felt like it went 15 minutes, and that was Kyle O'Reilly taking on Roderick Strong for the International Championship, which I thought was a good match.
Yeah, I thought it was a very, quite a good match. It was 17 minutes, 18 seconds, according to Cage Match. Maybe a couple minutes too long, but I did think it was very good. I think I went 4 flat on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really solid match. Two guys working well together, and, you know, it's not exactly one you're going to walk away from this this great show, you know, like front of mind with, but I thought it was really solid. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah. I went 4 flat on this too. My big thing with AEW pay-per-views, especially in the middle of cards, book more shit like this, because this was just good. Good wrestlers doing good things. Just go out there and have a good wrestling match. Like, Roderick Strong should be on every AEW pay-per-view and just facing somebody cool.
Yeah.
Give basically a 4-star match. Like, yeah. The middle of these pay-per-views lagged so much earlier on in the company's history because they didn't have guys like this. Now you do.
Yeah.
Just let Roddy do some cool shit.
Yeah, the depth is so much better these days. Oh.
The most important part of this was at the end of the match, Adam Cole comes out and he's walking. I don't know if that means he's medically cleared, which, let's be honest, he could be. Yeah. Because the injury happened in New York at Grand Slam, which would have been, I believe, September 20th. Mm-hmm. So you are 7 months removed from that injury. It is realistic that he could be ready to go. And that's a very intriguing option moving forward. So we'll kind of see what that means, how he gets reintroduced. And Dynamite, I think, is probably going to tell us a lot about Adam Cole.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, I thought this was... you know, a good match. I don't know about this follow-up. I don't think it's exactly a secret that I'm kind of down on the whole Undisputed Kingdom group as a just as a thing right now. They haven't felt like a main event act pretty much since their launch, in large part because of the injury to Adam Cole. So, you know, you can caveat that as much as you want. But, you know, for the most part, it's felt like, you know, Roderick Strong, mid-card champ, and Taven and Bennett, who are kind of presented as like geek heels, you know, in a way, despite being the Ring of Honor tag champs, and Wardlow visibly looking out there like he's just doesn't want to be there with this group, which I don't know. Maybe they're going to have him, you know, they're going to set it up where the Adam Cole group is going to try to turn on him and Wardlow gets them first, which feels like a weird direction for Wardlow, but I mean, the past 6-12 months has been a weird direction for him as well. So I don't know. We've talked before about how he feels very much like he's in a no man's land, and it continues, you know. Maybe they'll jump him with a face turn here, but I just don't know that the heel group means enough to get that really going. But I guess time will tell what they actually do.
Next up, Chris Jericho taking on Hook for the FTW title. I may be in the minority here. I thought this was good. And is it a little maybe too long, too melodramatic, too wonky of how they got to the story? Yeah, those are all fair critiques. But I like the idea of Jericho doing plunder at this point in his career. I like the idea of Jericho kind of being a shitbag. I like the idea of, even though Hook's got plenty of his own issues, him realizing he's done and being like super defiant, like, I dig that. And I thought that this worked out really well. Now, the follow up to me is going to be the biggest thing, because I saw a good friend of mine say that Jericho winning was like WCW Vince Russo. I'm like, dog, no, absolutely not. He's like, if you had a chance to make a made guy, I'm like, you realize this isn't even an AEW sanctioned title, right? Like, there's history with Chris Jericho and Taz. Let's see how this plays out. And you know what? It may suck, but it at least deserves the time to kind of do that, because there's a chance that Hook could be much better off at the end of this. But I don't know. 3.5, 3.75, good plunder. I wonder what Taz's involvement here is going to be. I don't know. I thought this was good, but the follow-up's the most important thing.
I wasn't wild about it. I thought it was fine. I think it was my lowest rated match of the night at 2.5 stars. I thought that there were some parts where it was good, but I'm not going to pretend otherwise, but I also felt like it went too long. There was some sloppiness at points, not in the good way. I don't know, you know, it was the reaction to Jericho whenever he comes out is almost reaching that kind of, it feels unfair to call it meme status, but whenever Callis comes out and just gets booed heavily, like, he's a great heel, let's not kid ourselves, but I also think there's a bit to it where it's just a thing you do at the AEW shows, and I feel like it's becoming a thing where Chris Jericho is just the heel you boo, even if he's not being presented outright as a heel. So the best thing they can do is lean into it, and I really think that what we're going to get is a Jericho character that is, you know, exactly what his critics are saying about him, that he's a guy who's hung around too long, you know, tries to take up heat from everyone else, and he's just going to 100% play that up on screen as a heel. And I think it's got legs. And if they I think that if they work this right, they're going to be able to turn what, you know, some of these fans are complaining about and turn it into a character that really works well for Chris Jericho. The problem with that is that I think Chris Jericho has really started to, you know, overall, not every single move he does or anything, but he started to decline this year. In the past year, I should say. And I think that is going to be a factor, because he's, I don't think he's at the level he was in ring in 2021, 2020. And I think that is important, or 2022 even. So we'll see how this works. I think it's got, it could work, but I definitely don't think it's any kind of guarantee. So I don't know. It's intriguing. Obviously, you know, it's for the best if it works for AEW, because they're still going to keep giving him TV time. You know, he's obviously considered a big deal there. You know, he was very important to them early on. You just have to hope that this doesn't turn into, like, you know, Jim Ross, when he came in, was brought in because he was a very big deal to people. And, you know, at some points, as time went on, Jim Ross did a very bad job. Now, I think he actually did pretty well last night. I have no anti-Jim Ross notes. But Jericho has to be careful about that as well, to make sure that he doesn't, you know, decline so much that he's an active hindrance to the show as an in-ring performer.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's kind of why I think the plunder really works for Jericho, because his body is starting to decay and he's starting to really regress in a lot of different areas. One of the easiest ways to kind of make up for it is plunder, doing yep. plunder. So yep. I want to see how this resolves. I want to see how this is going to kind of figure out, but I'm intrigued by this direction, and I think it's good to have Jericho doing something different. I think it's good to have Hook involved with somebody like Jericho in this kind of facet. I also get why people just want Jericho to go away. I think Jericho should go away for 6 months. I really do. Go to a Fozzy tour and come off of television and then come back, and hopefully things are in a better place. But yeah, that was that. Let's move on. Time is Toni Storm taking on Thunder Rosa. And this is going to sound insulting, but it's not at all. Thunder Rosa looked like a human in this match, and it was very weird.
Yeah.
No face paint. Just like a little bit of like eyeshadow makeup, but everybody does that. So that's nothing. No, from the graveyards of Tijuana, Mexico, no face paint. Make her look like something from the Day of the Dead, which I believe is like what the face paint kind of resembles. It was interesting. She looked like a plucky baby face.
I'm muted. She, you know, that was an interesting presentation. I'm not sure how they're going to roll with that going forward. It's kind of unfortunate because it feels like that her story's already over, though. I mean, I guess maybe it isn't. But it very much felt like a blow-off match with Toni Storm. And maybe they'll do some kind of multi-person gimmick given the involvement of Mariah May and Deonna Purrazzo. I thought this was a pretty good match. Went 3.5 on it. I enjoyed it. One of the better Toni Storm efforts post-gimmick change. We're still not getting, like, you know, peak Toni Storm, you know, before the Outcasts and all that. But hopefully we'll get that sometime. I enjoyed that. But yeah, I thought this was a very good match, you know, very solid, and yeah, they did well.
Yeah, I liked how when Mariah May started getting involved, Deonna Purrazzo came out. I don't really know how this whole thing is going to manifest itself, or if this is a pivot from the initial plan of Mariah May ending up like taking the belt off of Toni Storm. I'm not quite sure where this is all going, but look. This has been a good little feud, and now Thunder Rosa has no claim to the AEW Women's Championship as she finally was pinned for the title. I believe over 2 years since she won the belt at St. Patrick's Day Slam, I think 2022. Mm-hmm. So good match. Took a couple Storm Zeros to get it done. When Toni has the working boots on, she rocks. And yeah. I'm glad that we're seeing a little bit more of a shift toward that again, because this was great. Definitely.
Yeah, she was working hard in this one. I will say that, you know, I thought it was very interesting that I think Thunder Rosa was working very snug. And I think Toni may have been handing back some receipts. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there.
Well, considering Thunder Rosa's history, mm-hmm. that's not too far-fetched. But
probably not.
look, working stiff is fine. Yeah, but I think that they'll have a conversation backstage and be like, hey, come on, that's a little too rough. But some like it is what it is.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the greatest professional wrestler to ever live. Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. Look. It sounds like a gimmick, but I really believe Ospreay is the best professional wrestler of all time. We talked about it after Revolution, and then he does it again with Bryan Danielson. Like, we can give Bryan Danielson a ton of credit here, too. I think they deserve equal credit for how absolutely great this match was. Ospreay might be the most over wrestler in all of professional wrestling. He has these crowds on in the palm of his hand, and everything he does, it's technically precise. It's explosive. It's charismatic. There's nothing that Ospreay can't do at a super high level, including selling. Like, this was just a masterclass from both guys. And I'm going to let you go, Fred, but fuck, I was standing and pacing, and I'm like, this is incredible.
Yeah, this is one of the best matches I've ever seen. I was going through my notes, and the highest, you know, score I've ever given a match before was, I think it went 6.25 on two of the Omega Okada matches way back when. And I thought this was every bit as good, if not better, than those matches. And I, you know, if you're the person, if you're the kind of person that doesn't like breaking the scale, then you can just hit a 5 and walk on with your day. I think that's absolutely fine. I'm someone that, you know, likes to give, you know, and it's just like do people do in the plus system or whatever. It's just a way to denote like this was on a different level from, you know, Sting and the Young Bucks you know, insert any other match, you know, recently that was really great. And I just thought this was fantastic. Just perfect work from both guys in it. The dual spot where they had the they lined up for the knee and the hidden blade was amazing.
Did you hear the pop as they were preparing to like unleash out of the corners?
Yeah. Did you hear the bell? Wow. Talk about a bell pop.
Oh God. I'm speechless at how great this was. That duel and Ospreay going above Danielson to hit the hidden blade. Just next level stuff. And the like Ospreay gets a German suplex hit on him from Danielson. He pops up and hits the hidden blade on the front facing hidden blade on Danielson. And then he like collapses a little bit because he's like, he had the little fighting spirit spot, but well, he got absolutely rocked by the German suplex. And then he goes for an Os cutter and he gets a Psycho knee to the side of the head.
Now, that spot was amazing.
Oh,
I didn't take notes on this match because I absolutely would not, you know, I just could not, but it was amazing.
I will say, I thought these guys were teasing a draw. 5-ish minutes in, I thought they were teasing a draw. They had a special 60-minute time limit on this match, which is like, okay, really? We're going to do a special 60-minute time limit? You're trying to tell me something, but in reality, they just wanted to give them time to actually be able to do the match. But I thought these guys were going 60 and Tony paid for an extra hour of pay-per-view.
Yeah, I didn't know what they were going to do exactly, but it was... it was just a fantastic, fantastic match.
Oh, good Lord. Look, I said about both Ospreay Omega matches, I think this is now the greatest match of all time. Like, the way they synced everything together, the way you had big spots laced together with cohesiveness, with technical precision, with explosiveness, the Storm Driver, Tiger Driver 91, incredibly safe landing. We didn't even talk about the crazy spot of the match. A super Tiger suplex, which I have never seen before. That was one of the safest landings I've ever seen on a spot like that.
Yeah.
Just and then perfection. The Tiger
Driver. And then the Tiger Driver.
That was the safest Tiger Driver drop I've seen.
And it is very funny. I mean, they obviously should be selling it like a big deal. I think there's going to be an interesting conversation to have here in a second, but I think it's very funny to watch people get themselves worked and be like, oh my God, that spot was so unsafe. I can't believe that Bryan Danielson just died when, you know, he's got a history of not only great selling, but wanting to do these spots where people, you know, get concerned for him. That's part of wrestling. It's just very comedic to see that happen. Now I'm going to ask you a question here. And do you think that maybe they mistimed when to do, or if it, you know, if they shouldn't have done the injury spot here, just because, you know, we just saw one of the best matches ever, frankly. And then, you know, the match ends not with like people being able to be happy about it, but with this story about, well, Bryan Danielson just died. And, you know, everyone got super somber immediately. And I overshadowed the great match they just had. And I'm wondering if maybe they shouldn't have done that way.
It all depends on the follow-up.
Yeah.
Because in the moment, sure. I think you're 100% right. But if they follow it up well, I don't give a shit. I really don't. And to me, I think that's the biggest point about it. If you follow it up really well, nobody is going to care about the fact that there was that injury spot. Nobody's going to care because you followed it up well. And that part really intrigues me because it's all about how you deal with it. It's all about how you take things to the next space. And I do think that this happened probably like 40 minutes or so after the show. They had an exclusive clip with Ospreay in the trainer room with Danielson. This is obviously a work. It's not a shoot. I think it's way better done than the seizure spot that they did with the Okada match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I just want to see the follow-up.
Yeah. And we will. We will.
Any other thoughts on this match other than Will Ospreay is the greatest professional wrestler to ever live?
I may vote for Bryan Danielson in that conversation, but we're very blessed to live in a time where we're both alive to see two fantastic wrestlers on this level do a match. You know, we really are.
God bless America.
It was great.
God bless Tony Khan. Next up, the Young Bucks versus FTR for the AEW World Tag Team Championships and to become the winners of the tournament. Look, this match was dead for the first 5-7 minutes. Nobody gave a flying fuck.
It was, I mean, I know that they were like, yeah, we can follow that match, but man, maybe they should have rethought that.
Now, I will say, they got the crowd back.
Oh, they did. They did. It was a great match.
They killed themselves. Truly, truly impressed with how these guys went to war and threw their bodies around. Some of these spots, Nick Jackson hitting a 450 through a table. One of the best 450s I've ever seen. Matthew Jackson getting that table bump and basically landing with his head cocked on going up against the guardrail. Cash Wheeler diving to the outside through a table.
Oh, buddy, we need to talk about that for a second. That may have been the fastest, and I'm talking about anyone in Dragon Gate. I mean, you can put anyone his name up there. That may have been the fastest I've ever seen anyone run in the ring before. Was when Cash Wheeler charged himself up for that tope. He full blast right through those ropes, and buddy, he took a bump. He took an awful bump.
Great bump. And then the pile driver from Dax Matt on the ladder. This was awesome. This was a great ladder match. You had a couple of those spots at the end where they were fighting on top of ladders, but it wasn't that that old school chase ladder match where everybody's just trying to get up and then you have all these like fake ass like attempts that just they don't mean anything. Everything meant something in this match. These guys went to war. Very impressive. Really, really good. 4.5 stars. But the best part was Dax is about to get up there and you get this masked figure coming out and pushes Dax off the ladder and then security rushes in. And it revealed to be the scapegoat, Jack Perry. The same week after they mentioned him on television, the Young Bucks did. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, this is great.
And the Bucks get the titles. Molten hot heat for Jack Perry. Molten hot. I think this is going to work. And I'm really excited to see him with the Elite. This was awesome.
His smirk when that his mask was ripped off. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Oh, tremendous. I don't know where the tag team division goes from here. I hope we get the Motor City Machine Guns.
That'd be nice. That would be really nice.
But we'll kind of find out. They were not on this show. Apparently, they were wrestling in Ontario, which I think is that Border City Wrestling where they were wrestling for Scott D'Amore. I'm not sure who they were wrestling for.
Would make sense. I can check real quick if you want, but that would be logical. because I think that Damore had a hand in training them as well, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, at least Shelly was trained there. You know what? I don't have another match, or I don't have a match for Alex Shelly on for last night on Cage Match. Let me check saving real quick. Maybe it just hasn't been added yet. No, neither one.
Yeah. Look, good stuff. Really, really impressed with the effort from both players. Really impressed just on an overall scale. I want to see what the Young Bucks do with this title reign. I want to see how the Elite continues to evolve. Tony Khan talked in the post-match presser at the end how he wants Kenny Omega on the Winnipeg show, even if he can't wrestle. Look, I'm intrigued to see what happens next. And that's the best part about a pay-per-view. You get conclusions, but it's like watching General Hospital to all my children. You get a conclusion to a story, but they're automatically starting another one with that conclusion. And I thought this was well done in that sense. Now, Young Bucks and FTR are 2-2.
Yep.
And you're going to have a fifth match at some point, and it's probably going to be during this run. How does that go down? I'm excited to find out. And last match of the night, Fred. Swerve Strickland, or Black Panther, defeats Samoa Joe to win the AEW World title. Really cool homage to Jimmy Rave, and with Swerve wearing Jimmy Rave's coat, which Prince Nana put on him, which I thought was a great touch. If you remember, Rave wore that coat back in Ring of Honor with the embassy. So a really nice homage there. They made sure to mention it on commentary. Shout out Excalibur. The match, I'm going to be honest, this was an average-ass TV match.
I don't think that's fair.
Like a TV main event, like it was like 3.5 stars. And like
by that standard, yeah.
Like an average-ass Dynamite TV match. Sorry, I think that caveat's important. It was good. Wasn't great. It did tell a good enough story. It got the job done. Swerve is obviously over. And then they gave him 5 minutes to really celebrate with the title, talking about how important of a moment this is. And obviously, he is the first Black world champion in the history of All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really important for representation. It's going to be really important to a lot of people for that reason. But I also think it's really important in the fact that it elevates Swerve as a guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a really popular and over wrestler. He's a guy now. Anybody who wins that title is a guy. In the same way now, like John Moxley is a guy in New Japan. When Shota Umino or Yota Tsuji win the title, they will be a guy. Like it's different. It's like Iron Sheik being able to claim for 40 years that he was a WWF world champion.
Yeah.
Like it just means something more. But now that you have the ball, you got to run with it. How is Swerve going to impact the money? How is he going to impact business? Is he going to sell more tickets? Is he going to sell more pay-per-views? Because this pay-per-view, yeah, they were the main event. This was a Bryan Danielson, Will Ospreay pay-per-view. In the same way that Revolution was a Sting pay-per-view. So it's hard to truly impact the, like, you, let me restart. Sure. You can't fully put the onus of the pay-per-view and ticket sales on the champion. I give Samoa Joe no credit and no blame for Revolution, because that was not about him. It was about Sting.
Yes.
This show, to a little bit of a lesser extent, was about Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. The next show, Swerve Strickland. Yeah, you could say Monet, but it's not on the same level. If Swerve does big numbers for Double or Nothing, both pay-per-view buys and ticket sales, I think you're going to have a conversation like, yep, we made a guy. Now we'll kind of see how television ratings pop back. TV ratings are really hard to judge right now because AEW is constantly in the top five.
Yeah.
Top three even. People are just watching less television. And that's a problem when you're a television wrestling product. So I want to see how this title reign goes. I want to see how well he's booked. To me, length doesn't matter. I was having some conversations with a friend last night, and he was like, it needs to be a long reign. I'm like, no, it doesn't.
No, I agree. I argue you.
A short reign is better, but his argument, you know, this friend I was speaking to is African-American, and I have a completely different perspective than he does because I am not. And his worry was that it would be the Kofi run. I'm like, well, Kofi was different. Everybody wanted the win. They didn't want the reign. Like, Kofi was like a modern day Dusty Rhodes. They wanted the moment. Nobody cared about the reign once it happened. And for Swerve, it's different. They want the reign. They want him to be world champion. They didn't want the win. They wanted it all. So how are you going to book him? Who's his first opponent going to be? Are you going to book toward him facing Will Ospreay at All In? Are you going to do the Hangman match and Hangman beats him at Double or Nothing? Which, you know what? I would be okay with. I would not hate the idea of him losing the title right away, because I think short reigns for first reigns are fine. And then now you have a guy in Swerve Strickland who is now going to chase Hangman Page. And when he wins that title back at some point, he's going to beat Hangman for it, which you could have argued was the better story to begin with. But for whatever reason, that didn't end up happening. So I want to see how he's built. I want to see how he's booked. I want to see how the numbers come in. And that's going to be fascinating to watch and keep an eye on over the course of the next however long this title reign lasts. Because they've made a guy. Now he has to prove he can be the guy.
Yeah, I think it's a really intriguing period. I feel like he's really in an unfortunate position because it does feel like Will Ospreay is the biggest wrestler in the world right now. And that's terribly unfair to Swerve as a first-time champion, but it's also just kind of the reality of it. I think Swerve is tremendously over. I wouldn't rush anything. It's not like I'm calling for him to job Ospreay on Wednesday night just to be with the title over. I don't think that's necessary at all, and I think that'd be far worse. But I do think that there is a possibility that you could play this right and end up with a big Swerve versus Ospreay match at All In and have Ospreay win the belt there in the UK, which I think would be a massive moment for that market. I think that, you know, you do it right. You establish Swerve as a long-term main eventer and not just as a flash in the pan. Because, you know, you and I, we've both been calling for him to be a world champ since the start of 2023. And, you know, they took their time doing it. And, you know, that's fair. They wanted to build him up, and they did it right. I think that they definitely have succeeded in getting him over. And I think he's a main event level guy now. They just have to be careful with this run, because you don't want to do a thing where he's your champ and then you rush to get the belt off of him, or you book him poorly or something, and then you ruin the run. This is arguably a career defining like run for Swerve Strickland. I'm not saying yet he has to hold it for like 18 months or anything, but I do think you have to make sure that he has a nice run where he's able to get over, he's booked well, and that it all delivers for him. And fingers crossed we'll get that.
I can't wait. We've wanted to see the Swerve title run for a while, and we finally get it. But it's all going to be about how you handle it, how you book him, and how he responds. Because as much as it's on the onus of Tony Khan to make his world champion, it's on the world champion to make himself.
Sure, and, but he's been delivering. Swerve has been delivering.
It's different though, because now he's viewed as the world champion. So now there's a different set of expectations, a different set of rules, whether fair or not. And this was the case when Samoa Joe got the belt. It was the case when MJF got the belt, Hangman Page, and the list goes on. Yeah. How are you elevating the title? The title should not just elevate you. It should be there should be some real synergy when Kenny Omega held the belt, it elevated the title, and the title elevated Omega. It was a combo. You got to have both. And I'm very, very excited to see Swerve get the opportunity. He's deserved it. He's a great worker. He's a great character. He's over as fuck. Now you have to be able to maintain and continue that growth. Not everybody can do it. And that's what separates the greats from those who are just really, really good.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's going to be a really fascinating stretch. And, you know, it's another very intriguing part of AEW story, and I'll be really looking forward to it. One thing I want to mention about the match, which I thought was quite good, but it was very unfortunate that I think they had it set up where the match was supposed to end with both Swerve and Joe on the top rope, and Swerve jumping basically straight up and then stomping Joe on the way down, and they didn't do it right. He missed. But he landed on his feet, rolled through, hit a powerbomb off the turnbuckle, and then hit a normal swerve stomp. And I thought they covered for it very well. It was just unfortunate.
Yeah. All I know is...
Another AEW, great pay-per-view.
You know what AEW feels like? This feels like post All Out 2021, where you've got some real growth happening. You've got people who are about to emerge into massive roles. And I'm really, really excited to see what that looks like. I am. I can't wait. This is going to be a great, great process. And get excited, Fred. We're about to hit a fun ass summer. A little bit of housekeeping. I will not be on a show later this week. Fred may have something.
Nope, not this week.
Perfect. NFL draft is this weekend, so I will be working probably 70 hours in 4 days. So I will unfortunately not have time. I will watch the Dynamite, and I'll probably post some thoughts in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, which I highly recommend you go to. And if you love the show, I want to remind everybody, we do have a donation button. That is for, hey, you think we're great, and you want to give us a little something. If you don't, that's okay. We're grateful to just have you as a listener. So like, subscribe, do all the fun things. Give us a 5-star review. Give us a positive review. Tell us in those reviews who you think the greatest wrestler of all time is and why. And tell us in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, because my opinion is it's Will Ospreay. We've had that conversation before, and I'm going to continue to beat that drum. Fred, I actually don't know what your opinion is on that, Fred. Because
not who the greatest wrestler is.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I don't know that I have a clear cut one. Danielson and Ospreay are both in the conversation, and I think Misawa and Kobashi both are up there. That's really close to my absolute top tier. Rey Mysterio, I think, is another good one.
That's an interesting one. Especially because a lot of the WWE run, there just wasn't a lot of peak.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily his fault
even
either.
So much. Yeah. And it's really, I think the earlier stuff is what really defines him as a worker. Maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin. Maybe, I don't know, a dark horse would be Mick Foley. I think that he was a fantastic brawler and one of the best promos ever. Terry Funk, Deeds mentioned. I don't know.
Yep.
I could just name guys forever, but like it's impossible for me to pick one, I think.
Yeah. A lot of good wrestlers out there. Tell us who you think you're the best wrestler is. With that being said, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for your patronage. That donation link is in the show notes. We're very grateful for all of you for listening. Have yourself a wonderful day. Enjoy.
Take care, everyone.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.